Welcome to the Dr. Dobbs Journal podcast. I'm your host, Mike Riley. In the second half of this two-part interview, Ruby on Rails podcast host Jeffrey Grossenbach discusses the advantages of developing web applications using the Ruby on Rails framework. The conversation concludes with Jeffrey sharing his favorite commercial websites built using Ruby on Rails that showcase the technology in exciting and innovative ways. How would you compare Rails to some of these other languages that you've worked with?
Well, for me, I don't know if I'm an average example or different. I've written code in many different languages, and often I sat down and worked on something without ever really studying it. The school that I worked at used Cold Fusion, and I just knew that I wanted to have a few things, add a few different features to their site, to their intranet, or teachers needed different functionality, and so I sat down and I wrote some Cold Fusion. So I feel like I pick up things pretty quickly. That being said, you know, Ruby is just a great language. It's got a lot of great features from other languages that have been kind of overlooked, like Smalltalk, and it's kind of plucked all the best pieces out of those different languages and put them together in a nice package. So for me, Ruby is a little bit different, especially if a person comes from PHP or Perl. It's very different from those languages. If you've been involved in Java a lot, of course, you're familiar with objects and how to work with inheritance and different things like that. But the fact of the matter, you know, Rails, a lot of people start learning it, and they kind of learn Rails concurrent with learning Ruby just because the syntax is very clear. You look at some examples, you see what's going on, and then as you need to, you can learn more the guts and how it works.
In your opinion, what is the most effective and efficient way to learn Ruby on Rails?
Well, it's nice. They have some screencasts of just videos. You can watch someone writing a small blog or a sample project, you know, just over 15 minutes or something. Sometimes those are a little deceiving because the truth is to write a legitimate project, it takes a little more than 15 minutes, and there are other elements that go into it. But that's a nice way just to get started and see what's happening. Right now, there aren't that many books out there. Of course, personally, I'd say come to one of my workshops. I teach Ruby on Rails workshops and give people just a ton of code and special cheat sheets and graphical tutorials that I've put together. To me, the ideal thing, if you live in a city that has this, is, you know, find a Ruby user group and just show up. It doesn't matter if you can't spell Ruby, if you've never even touched it. People are really friendly. Many people show up here at the Seattle Ruby group, and some of them, you know, have never even touched HTML before, and they're like, hey, I want to learn to work with a database. I want to learn to write Ruby and write a Rails app, and people will sit down with them and help them and give them pointers. Of course, there's a lot of work that has to be done separate from that to learn all the details, but user groups, Ruby user groups, are popping up all over the place, and that's a great way to just get your questions answered, go in there, talk to people who are friendly, who love Ruby, and love to help you learn.
And, of course, there's another great resource, which is the Ruby on Rails podcast over at podcast.rubyonrails.org. One of the things I really enjoy, particularly about the podcasts that you post at podcast.rubyonrails.org, is your broad discussion with all of these Ruby on Rails luminaries, you know, the people who are really behind it. Most recently, you had a discussion with Planet Argon, the folks who are actually one of the few predominant outfits that is actually hosting Ruby on Rails applications. What actually got you started in wanting to do a specific Ruby on Rails podcast?
Well, I started like you did or like other people. I was listening to it. Actually, someone else started it. Scott Barron, he's one of the core developers, and I think David Hanemeyer Hansen, creator of Rails, had a friendship with Scott and said, hey, you should start a podcast, and so Scott did it. He did two interviews, And then he didn't do one for about a month. And I had been listening, and I said, hey, I'd like to hear more of this. And there aren't any episodes. So I wrote a letter to Scott, and I said, hey, if I interview somebody, would you put it up there on the website? And he said, oh, sure. So I think I've done 12 or 13 since then, and he actually has handed it over to me. So I'm the official host now. But I just started because I wanted to hear from these people, and nobody else was doing it, and I wanted to meet intelligent and brilliant programmers who were doing interesting stuff with Ruby and with Rails. And fortunately, nobody has refused me yet. Well, actually, one person did, but I think it was kind of a joke. So, so it's a great, gotten to meet a lot of great people, and hopefully there will be many more.
What do you think is on the horizon for the podcasts moving on in the future as Ruby continues to evolve?
You know, right now there's no Ruby-specific podcasts, which is why I try to get other Rubyists, people who have been involved in the Ruby community even before Rails was around. A couple weeks ago, I had Jim Wyrick. He wrote the Rake automation libraries for Rails, and he wrote XML Builder for a nice interface for writing XML, and helped a lot in the Ruby Gems system that distributes libraries to your computer. And so I'm looking forward to having other Rubyists on there, people who maybe even aren't doing anything at all with Rails, but are doing interesting stuff with Ruby. Even other people who aren't doing things with Ruby at all. I had Abby Bryant on there, who's a Smalltalk developer. He has used Ruby, and he's definitely familiar with it, but he's doing some interesting things with Smalltalk. And definitely Ruby has been influenced by different programming methodologies, agile development, test-driven development, all that kind of thing. So I'm hoping to get some of the famous agile developers on there to talk about those ideas, since they play such a big part with Rails. I do hope to get to interview Mats. I actually talked to him last fall at Ruby Conference in San Diego, and he was very interested. I have a friend over there in Japan who's volunteered to translate, but he just had a baby his wife had a baby a month ago, and so I didn't want to bug him, you know,
sure,
2 days later after that. So maybe even in the next couple weeks or month or something like that, we'll get not only Mats, but I hope to get some other Japanese Ruby developers. A whole new Ruby virtual machine is being developed over there by Koichi Sasada, and so hopefully we'll get some Japanese developers via translation.
Given the fact that Ruby is such an international phenomenon, are you familiar? Have you seen or looked at the logs of who is downloading the podcasts? Is it really a broad audience, or is it mostly focused in North America at this time?
Well, I was in London teaching a workshop a month ago, and a lot of people there had heard the podcast, and so it was great to meet some of them. So, and then I get emails from people from Australia and Norway and even Ghana. I might be going to Ghana, Africa.
Wow.
To do a presentation over there. So yeah, it's all over the world, lots of different people and every different continent, maybe not Antarctica, though.
Well, you never know. There's an awful lot of scientists down there in those various stations, though.
Maybe so.
As we've seen with other languages, as they come on the scene, they sort of reach a critical mass, and then there's a huge acceleration ramp, the old hockey stick of adoption rate that's going on. And then there's sort of like this plateau that evens itself out. When do you see with Ruby that plateau is going to hit, or is it still way too soon and we're still on such an acceleration curve that it's too difficult to predict at this time?
It is hard to tell for a couple reasons. I mean, one is just the nature of Rails itself and the way it's designed. A lot of people look at it maybe on the low end if they're just looking to get into programming, and they say, what? You know, I have to keep, just to make one page, I have to write in three different files, and I have to set up some configuration, even if it's minimal. You know, what's up with that? Just give me a single file, and I'm going to write some HTML in there, and I'll have a website. So some elements of Rails may be off-putting in that event and may reduce the the overall appeal of Rails in that aspect. Also, the difficulty of deploying it. You've got a whole bunch of folders. You've got file permissions. You have to have certain settings for your web server. And definitely there are some great ISPs out there who really want to help you with that, and they have a good setup, and others are even completely automating that so that you can download a little script and deploy your Rails app, and it makes it a lot easier. But some of those aspects may reduce the overall widespread adoption or appeal of it. And at least so far, you know, there's only one book on Rails. There's definitely a lot of information online that you can find out, but sometimes if people, depending on how people like to learn, it may be more difficult to learn Rails since there's not a whole lot of information out there. So over the next year, that's definitely going to be changing. I think there are something like 12 or 13 books in the works that will really make it a lot easier for people, and I'm going to be looking forward to buying a lot of those books myself, even though I've read through all the API documentation and stay up on all kinds of blogs. So who can tell? I think just the design, the capabilities for what people want to do with the web today, that's not going to go away, and it continues to improve. So I couldn't chart exactly how, you know, are there going to be twice as many, five times as many people in a year, but I think it's definitely going to increase.
So if people wanted to find out more about the seminars that you're going to be delivering, as well as hear about the podcasts and other activities that Top Monkey is up to, where can they go to find out more?
Well, I have best place, topfunky.com is my site. It has links to all different places, and that's be the best place. There's a link to the podcast, there's a link to my workshops, there's a link to my Rails blog. Other than that, carsonworkshops.com, they host all my workshops, and you can get all kinds of information there.
What is your favorite Ruby on Rails application today?
Wow, it's hard to choose one. Definitely, so I'm not going to choose one, but maybe I'll say my favorite. But Fluxium is definitely interesting. Fluxium.com, made by the guy on the Core Rails team who does all the JavaScript visual effects, Thomas Fuchs, and it's for managing your photos, all kinds of, I think even all kinds of documents, not only graphical documents, and it's amazing just to see it. There's a short little video. It almost looks like a desktop application, flipping through your photos, resizing things, dragging things around, whatever. It's hard to believe that's even being done in a web browser. On a completely different level, there's a site, I don't think it's fully released yet, but called Crazy Egg, and they've got some tools for tracking visits to your website. You can actually see where people have clicked. I wrote a little photo gallery, and I set this up on the site, and I could see how many people were, say, clicking on a photo versus a link, and that kind of usability information is just goes great hand in hand with the ideology of Rails. We just want to make sites really easy to use and accessible, and being able to measure that and how people are actually using sites. So those are a few I'm excited about.
For more details about the Ruby on Rails podcast, visit podcast.rubyonrails.org. For more information about this and other Dr. Dobbs Journal podcasts, visit www.ddj.com/mediacenter/. For Dr. Dobbs Journal, I'm Mike Ryland.